This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and boy, we have a special guest today. He's never been on the show before. His name is Blake Crouch. He has written a new book called Dark Matter. Very interesting cover on it. I love this cover. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. You're a rookie. You've never been on the show before. I love
I've
rookies.
I've never been on the show. How long have you been doing the show?
Probably 10 years now. It's been a long time. It hasn't always been on that site. It's been on other sites too, but in case anybody's wondering what we're talking about, davidsbooktalk.com, that's where you'll hear this. But this book, Dark Matter, this cover is amazing. I don't know, there's something about this cover I really like, even though there's no pictures on it. It's just the way that Dark Matter is on the cover. So did you design this cover?
I did not design the cover. I think if a publisher ever let me design a cover, I would probably be with the wrong publisher. No, this cover was designed by Chris Brand, who is the head of the art department over at Crown. He did the Gone Girl cover, The Martian. Guy is just a genius. And this was a hard one because we really wanted something that was purely textual, no other images. And that's hard to pull off and make really impactful. But I think he killed it.
Yeah, it catches the eye quite literally, and I think that's the point when you see this in the bookstore. But this not only is I read the book, of course, and I love the book, and I don't say that about very many books on the face for some reason.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't know why that is. I'm very picky about books. Sometimes it has to have a good beginning, middle, and ending. If it doesn't have that, I'm probably not going to like it. Or I'm going to like parts of it, but not all of it. And I hate when I have to tell an author that. If I ever have to, you know,
you bring authors on and tell them that you like only one part of their book.
Well, usually I don't interview them if I don't like the book. If I read the book and I can't get into it, there's no point in doing interviews because I'm only going to end up insulting them, and then I'm sure never get another. And you know, they may become big, and I may need them at some point. You know,
right? You never know.
I mean, but this book is just so fascinating. You do dialogue so well. I mean, that is, it's so necessary for a book. You go through this book, you see there's a lot of dialogue in this book, but it's very smoothly written, and that's really important for a book. I mean, you have to be able to understand the book.
I love using dialogue to propel the narrative. I think it's probably, I'm just a big Elmore Leonard fan, and he did that better than anyone. I mean, if you look at his books, they're nothing but dialogue.
Right, but it has to be interesting. There's interesting dialogue, and then there's boring dialogue for me. And
what do you think is boring dialogue? How do you define that?
I don't know. Just dialogue that doesn't work. The back and forth doesn't work, or the. You know, or it's not keeping your interest. And I think sometimes you can be... I'm trying to think, maybe most times dialogue does work in any form at all. In fact, if you're bored with a book, maybe the dialogue is better. But it has to still be an interesting story. You have to have an interesting story, and that's what makes this book so good. It's so interesting. I mean, what would happen to... What of this book is really believable? I mean, what could really happen in real life? Do you believe this could really happen in real life?
Oh, are you asking me of how factual the scientific
yes.
mumbo jumbo is?
I wasn't going to call your book mumbo jumbo. So.
Look, the whole field of quantum mechanics is, I mean, there's a lot of things that are all agreed upon by physicists, and then there's a big nebulous area that delves more into the philosophical implications. Because at its core, quantum mechanics is only about how particles behave at the subatomic level. And the truth is that particles are insanely schizophrenic when you start to study them, because they appear to exist in different places at the same time. he did this experiment, which was named the Breakthrough of the Decade by, I think it was Science Magazine. And what he did is he took this superconducting wafer, and without getting too bogged down in the scientific nitty-gritty of it, he essentially put it in a state of superposition, where it was vibrating at different frequencies simultaneously. And what was so cool about this is that this was the first object that was visible to the human eye that was existing in a quantum superposition. And he makes the point in his TED Talk that, look, if particles are behaving this way, if we know that an object that we can see with our own eyes is behaving this way, is it possible that perhaps our lives behave this way? That our lives are not on one single timeline, in other words, the reality that we see, but that at each moment when there's a choice or when something occurs to us, there's a branch in that timeline. One version of us goes off into another reality. And the reason we can't see these other realities is because of something called decoherence, which basically locks us into the world that we see.
It's fascinating.
Our own sphere of observation.
It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, and yeah. The main character, Jason Dessen, I mean, we wonder, is he, I mean, he's happy with his wife, but is he happy with his, totally with his life? And that's kind of like the premise of the book. If you're not happy with your life, can you change? Can you have an alternate reality where you are perfectly happy?
Yeah.
So one would wonder if you're perfectly happy, like the way you are right now.
I mean, I don't know that anyone's perfectly happy. Look, it's no, I think, coincidence that I happened to write this book in my mid-30s. I think in your mid-30s, you can live long enough to start to look back at the choices you've made, and not that there's any terrible choices, but you look back and you imagine, well, if I'd done something differently, where would I be now? Would I be living this other life that I can imagine out there? Maybe some version of me is. I just can't see that. I think about some of the risky choices I made in my career that have led me to this moment, but I wonder if I had to make those. If I had to decide.
I wonder, do you blame it on the youth? You were young, or... I mean, you're still young now. I mean...
Yeah.
You look at Stephen King, who's like late 60s now, I guess 60, almost 70 years old, and still writing, and still going strong. And you're just starting out, you have millions of people reading your books, and you're writing, and you love to write. So what could be wrong with your life?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying anything's wrong with my life. I love my life, but I still feel the pull of the past. And, you know, what if instead of becoming a writer, what if I'd done something else? What if I'd, I live in the mountains here in Colorado. I'm at my desk writing away, but what if I'd become a forest ranger and spent all of my days up in the mountains? I love to spend as much time in as I can. It's things like that I think of, and of course, that would be the most compelling story engine for a book, so I amped up the stakes and built it around a guy who truly was experiencing this discontent with his life. Because, Jason Dessen is this middling college professor. He's a genius, but he's made choices in his life that have stopped him from, becoming a superstar in his field, and it pulled him away from the research and the discovery of being a physicist and more towards teaching bored undergraduates.
Well, what would that feel like if suddenly you have a son and then the next minute you don't have a son anymore? You can't imagine what that would feel like. I mean, the pain, just thinking about it. As a father, I'm sure you have children, right?
I do. I have three.
Right. Can you imagine not having one of your children? I mean, it's too horrifying even to imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's one thing if something were to happen to them and you would worry about them, but to suddenly wake up and they don't exist, and you think, am I dreaming? Am I in a coma? Has something horrible happened to me? Am I losing my mind? And that's some of the journey I tried to take Jason Dessen through in the first 80 pages of Dark Matters is, let's just put a guy who's not a regular guy, but who's actually a genius in this situation, and let's see how he tries to explain the unexplainable.
It's interesting, just sitting here talking to you, I'm thinking about different scenes from the book. And, you know, with the beginning scenes where he's walking down the street and things that happen afterwards, I'm dancing all around this because I don't want to give too much away. I want people to experience the book firsthand. I don't want to give any clues as to what's going to happen. But just as he's walking down the street and suddenly his life changes, you know, it's fascinating. It's like, what would I do if I were in that situation? You can't help but ask yourself those questions as you're reading these books. Any book. I mean, how would I handle this? Would I be as good at handling it as Jason is? And what and you as a writer have to ask yourself that all the time. Well, how would he react? What would he be like? And how do I convey that to the reader? And what, you know,
exactly. That's the challenge of writing a book like this, which in the first part of it at least is kind of a psychological paranoid thriller. You have to really put yourself in the character's shoes. And,
is this the first sci-fi novel you've written, or have you written others?
No, I wrote the Wayward Pines trilogy, which is absolutely sci-fi. Sci-fi with it's similar to Dark Matter in that it opens and it, you feel like you're in a psychological suspense novel, but then the trick of Wayward Pines is it masks its genre. So only when you get deeper into the story do you realize, oh, I'm reading a sci-fi novel.
Right. Isn't it interesting how we pigeonhole books into certain things? I mean, you can classify certain books as thrillers or mysteries or, you know, suspense. You can put it, there's so many different classifications for books. It's like, what do we call this? I mean, your book could be considered a thriller. It's definitely science fiction, and you know, it's different things. But what do you call
horrifyingly
it?
Horrifyingly, I accidentally wrote a kind of a romance storyline in the book as well, which I didn't set out to do. Yeah, I mean, I think as a writer, I don't really care about genre classification. I am interested in it, and I don't necessarily think your average reader is aware of or can articulate the genres that they like, but I know that they intuitively understand what they like, and they know that if they're reading something that was billed as one thing, but it's another, that there's a disconnect in the mind of the reader. So I am very conscious about.
Right. Do you know whether you have more female or male readers?
I have no idea.
I was sure you were going to know, but authors seem to know whether they were. Do you hear from more from men or more from women?
I would say it's 50-50. I think it's a pretty...
It's funny because I don't think of a lot of men as writers, as writing into... I mean, I've written to authors before many a time, but I don't think a lot of my male friends would go to the trouble of writing to a writer.
You know? A lot of emails from them.
So they email is what they do, yeah. So that,
they do.
But somehow, you know, when I remember when I used to write, and I would literally sit down and write a letter to an author, and how much fun that was to see whether you could get a response. You know, to see what kind of a response you got. I remember I got a response from Dean Koontz one time, and I was so thrilled.
Wow.
And had this little drops of blood at the bottom of the letter. Like, fake, they weren't real blood. They were like, he was just writing in red ink. But I was so thrilled by that response that he had taken the time to write to me. You know, that he cared enough about me to write. Was Dark Matter difficult to write?
It was very hard to write.
Why?
It took a long... Well, because quantum mechanics is intimidating and confusing, and it took a long time for me to read enough articles, talk to enough people about it, begin to understand the core concepts enough to build a thriller out of it. And also, it's a very serpentine, mind-bending narrative. Had a bunch of the threads of Dark Matter floating around in my head for, I don't know, 10 years. And I tried to write each of them at one point in time or another, but always fizzled out because no one of them on their own was enough to support a full novel. But 2 years ago, I realized suddenly on this brainstorming trip when I was in Chicago with a writer friend of mine, I realized that these three different storylines I had been attacking separately, that they all fit together like puzzle pieces into this one book.
Then interesting.
This book was Dark Matter. And I realized, and now I can write about quantum mechanics also because I feel like I have enough of that under my belt to not sound like an idiot.
should mention that this is published by Crown Books. I don't know if I said Crown Books earlier. How did they react to you telling them, I'm going to write a book about quantum mechanics? Or did you just write the book and turn it in? Or how did that work?
Well, the way I sold the book was I had finished writing my Wayward Pines trilogy for Amazon, and I didn't have a publishing contract for my next book yet. I didn't want one either, because I just wanted to write my next book and write whatever I wanted to write. So I wrote 150 pages of Dark Matter, and I felt so strongly about these pages that it was the best thing I'd ever written. And my agent, film agent, felt the same. And so we sent those 150 pages out to a very small, select group of publishers. And, you know, long story short, there was a bidding war. Landed at Crown with my editor, Julian Pavia, who I had really wanted to work with. He's the guy behind Ready Player One and The Martian. He was publishing the kinds of books that I love to read and I love to write. And I had a sense that it would be a good fit, and it was a great fit. And the day after we sold the book to Crown, we sold the film rights to Sony Pictures.
And you were going to write the screenplay?
I just finished the first draft of it.
Did you really? Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
This is going to be a really great movie. I mean, it really is going to be terrific. I can't even imagine how wonderful it is. And it will stick to the story completely, as far as the book is concerned.
Well, unless I get fired off of it, which is entirely possible.
No, don't say that.
The way it goes in feature film, awesome.
Is there any talk about who's going to play the parts yet?
No, not yet. Too soon.
Who do you see in your mind? If you had to pick two right now for the male and the female lead, who would you pick?
I can't say it out loud because I'm a producer on the film, and if we don't get the two that I mentioned, then the guy is...
So you have somebody in mind?
Yes, I do have people in mind.
I see Matt Damon playing the man.
He should just be in every movie, right?
Yeah, no, not necessarily, but I could definitely see him in this part.
Yeah.
I could see him doing something.
And then Ben Affleck could play Ryan, his friend, and they could get back and do that whole
exactly.
Kind of rivalry thing. But yeah, that'd be fun.
It's fun how it's interesting how a movie works. Good Will Hunting is such a great movie, and to think that they would ever make a movie as good as that would be very difficult for me, in my mind. But, you know, what made Good Will Hunting so good was everything together. It wasn't just simply one person. Although Matt Damon's very good in the movie. And, you know, it's a combination of things. Now, Wayward Pines is in its second season now. Are they doing all three of your books? Is every book a season? Is that how it's going, or what?
No, the first season pretty much blew through all of the plot of all three books.
Oh, really?
It's one of the things about television. Television just churns through plot. I mean, the first episode was almost half of the novel time. So, second season, we went off book, with a few exceptions. The end of the second season has some real similarities to the end of my trilogy, and the character of Adam Hassler and Margaret the Abbey are straight out of Wayward, the second book. So, we have scavenged all of the plot morsels we can from the books.
So the first season did really well, obviously, because it was the second season. Is there going to be a third season?
That remains to be seen. The second season was also the number one scripted show of the summer. And M. Night Shyamalan and I, when we were brainstorming Wayward Pines Season 2 and trying to decide if we wanted to continue beyond the first season, we basically broke a three-season arc that would completely finish the story out. So if we're lucky enough for Fox to greenlight a third season, we know the story that we want to tell, and it would definitively end the series. There would not be a season beyond three.
Now, did you write the screenplay for the first one?
I didn't. I wrote three of the science fiction television. The guy who wrote the pilot script for it was Chad Hodge, who is also my writing partner on a new show that we're doing that's premiering in November on TNT. But he wrote the pilot script for season one.
Now, is that Good Behavior? Is that the one you're talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. What's the basic premise of Good Behavior?
Good Behavior is based on three novellas that I have written off and on over the last handful of years. It's very different from Weird Times and Dark Matter in that there's not some high concept. In fact, the concept is this character of Letty Dovesh, who is our lead character. And she's played by Michelle Dockery, who was Lady Mary in Downtown.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow. And the premise is that Letty is just out of prison. She is a meth addict. She's estranged from her son. She's working this shitty job in a diner, trying to get her life back on track and failing. When we meet her, she's ripping off rooms in this luxury hotel, actually, in Asheville, North Carolina. And on the last hotel room of the day, as she's trying to like find if there's any cash or a laptop or an iPad to steal, the guest of the room returns, and she has to hide in this closet with these slabs. Imagine Kyle MacLachlan in Blue Velvet peeking through those. Peeking through those slabs. It's a little bit of a moment like that. And the guy who comes back into the room with this other guy proceeds to hire this hitman to kill his wife. And it's about if Letty decides to get involved, and will she try to stop this, or will she just go about her business as usual? It's ultimately a very twisted love story about a meth addict and this assassin who might be the only guy who can save her.
Wow, sounds really good. I can't wait to see it. That'll start in November?
Yeah, it's premiering November 15th on Tuesday.
Do you have trouble writing every book you write? I mean, do you struggle with books, or is it easy?
It's always hard.
But is it still fun for you, though? Or do you enjoy it?
It's a blast.
But what do you do when you get to the point where you're out of ideas, or you can't get to past a problem? What do you do?
I don't believe that you run out of ideas. I really don't believe that. I think what I've... after I wrote Wayward Pines, I realized all of the cool things that happen when you write big ideas. It's just easier in the long run. It's easier to get people to read the book, to get them to respond to it. When you write a big idea, you have a life beyond the book itself, and film and TV and international publications. So for me, the hardest part is finding the right idea. And not just latching on to the first thing that comes to me, but really digging down and finding something new and fresh that hasn't been done before. And when I say that hasn't been done before, obviously there are no real new stories. Everything's been done to death.
I think when I said that, I mean, what I was really referring to was the fact that if you're in the middle of a book and you suddenly hit a brick wall where you can't figure out where the story's going to go next, has that ever happened to you?
Early on, but I don't start writing a book anymore before I know what the end is going to be.
So you had the whole thing planned out even before you start writing it?
Generally. It's not down to the beat, but I will have, when I start a book, like Dark Matter, for instance, I knew very clearly what the first third of it was, had a general idea of what the second third was, and I had a few milestones to aim and reach for in the last act. And if I have those things, I know that it's not that I'm never going to sort of hit a wall occasionally, but I'm never going to just hit an absolute brick wall from which there is no escape. I did that in my first two books. I just wrote without... I kind of wrote with abandon and just went for it, and I just hit brick walls and had to do massive rewrites and throw tons and tons of pages out. And doing that two times, I realized, you know what? Never again. I'm not going to start a book until, A, I'm so excited about this idea, I can't wait to spend the next 2 years of my life on it, and B, I feel confident that I know where I'm going.
You sound like you have a very vivid imagination. I know you like to go exploring. I've heard that. You like to go outside exploring. And where do you like to go? Old mining camps, I hear, and mining towns.
Yeah.
You like that stuff.
I do.
Do you like caves, too?
A cave kind of freaked me out. No.
Not a cave fan.
I don't want to die in a cave. That just sounds horrible. I love the San Juan Mountains where I live. They're just beautiful. And I'm happiest in the forest than climbing the mountain.
Now, do you have a notebook that you take with you and when you're making, do you make notes or what?
Yeah, sometimes. Like right now, when I'm actively in the midst of trying to find my next idea, yeah, I always have a notebook.
Do you have a beginning of an idea for the next book?
I have several, and I'm speed dating them.
Now, would you ever consider writing a trilogy again, or was that tough?
I wouldn't say never. What I will say is that by the time I finished Weird Pines, I couldn't wait to write a standalone novel.
Mm.
And I still am happy that my next book, whatever it is, it will be a standalone novel.
It sounds like you like the standalones better.
I do. You know, it was nice writing Weird Pines as a trilogy, but by the time you finish it, you know, I spent 5 years of my life in Wayward Pines. I mean, I could not escape Wayward Pines. And between the show and the book, I was very much in need of a battery recharge. I don't know how writers write 17 book series. Like, I don't know how Sue Grafton does that.
Yeah.
That seems like I would be so sick of these characters. I would have to do something new. But maybe if I created a character like her, I'd want to write it forever.
Now, you're translated into, I think, 20 languages? Is it more now? Or is it still 20?
I think 35.
It's 35 now. Wow. I must have old information. I figured it probably is. I do that all the time. I'll say to an author, you have 4 million copies? And they'll say, oh, actually, it's 12 million now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was off by 8 million. I hope you don't mind. You know? You never want to insult the author, you know, or I won't get the
interviews. Well, yeah, you know, authors, very fragile ego.
But you mentioned North Carolina, Statesville. That's where you were born, near there.
I was. I was born in Iredell County.
Now, is that where they're going to film the TV show? Or is that where they're filming the TV show, Good Behavior?
It's where we filmed it. We filmed it in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, that must have been fun for you. You can go down and visit your old home.
It was a lot of fun. We shot the pilot last October, and then we got picked up the series in December, and we shot the remaining 9 episodes from March through the end of last month. And we shot it all in North Carolina, which is lovely because that's where the stories take place. It's where we set our pilot scripts. And it was really nice to be able to take that business.
Michelle seems like a really nice person. I've seen her on talk shows. And of course, she's so tremendous in Downton Abbey. I mean, God.
She is an amazing human. And her performance in Good Behavior is really astonishing. And I don't say that lightly. I've had plenty of amazing actors portray characters I've written in Weird Pines. Her performance is astonishing.
That's great to hear. It's going to be on TNT, you said? I can't wait to see it.
It's going to be on TNT.
That's going to be tremendous. So you've got all these ideas flitting around in your head. So, and you constantly, every day, come up with ideas?
No. Most days I'm trying to, for instance, when I'm in a period like I am now where I'm brainstorming and figuring out what the next thing is going to be. It's, you know, some days I am in love with the idea I'm working on and taking notes and it goes great. And then other days I fall out of love with it and I think, oh, this feels like it's been done before. I'll see a way through it. It's a very emotional up and down period of time trying to lock on to the next idea. Because I want to be very rigorous about what I choose to do next. The right idea. I mean, I wrote my first, I would say, handful of novels were smaller ideas. They were more in the thriller horror genre. They were more niche. They were just not the kind of ideas that the masses would necessarily be attracted to. And that's not to say that I am just writing for a huge audience. I mean, if I just wanted to attract the masses, you know, I'd write porn on Amazon with covers of bare-chested men on them. If I just wanted masses from out of people to read my books. But I just, a friend and I had a breakthrough kind of at the same time, right before I started writing Weird Times, and then right before he started writing his brilliant trilogy. I don't know if you know the novelist Marcus Fakey.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've interviewed him, actually.
Have you? Yeah, great. Well, he was down here in Colorado, I think this was 2010, and we were climbing this mountain up in the San Juan Mountains. We're like at 13,000 feet. We just said, let's go for a camping trip and talk about our next books. And we just had this epiphany, no more small books. And that was the huge turning point, I think, in both of our careers.
You've got something really good here with Dark Matter. I mean, this is really terrific stuff. I don't know what it took to get there, but you hit a home run with this one. It's just such an interesting book, and I read a lot of books, and I find that I get stuck sometimes on page 20 or page 30, or stuck in the beginning, and I'm sure we've all experienced that. But I just did so enjoy reading this book. I mean, it's just a fascinating book to read, and it's more than just fascinating. Like I told you, the dialogue is terrific, the characters are terrific, and the situations are ones that everybody who reads it can relate to. So that makes it even more of a personal book for everybody that reads it. And the thought that it's going to be a movie, I just want to, scream in pleasure. You know, it's like wonderful. Let's do it now.
I'm right there with you. Fingers crossed.
And so you really know how to tell a good story. You're really, really good at what you do. But it sounds like you still have a lot of doubts.
Always, but I think you should have doubts. You should always have doubts.
But you wake up in the morning and say, I'm not that bad of a writer. Or do you wake up and say, I got to, or how?
Everyone who I know who is successful, they all feel like a fraud. They all feel like they don't have any good books left in them. And I think you're supposed to feel like that. I think it's the fear of not meeting your expectations or surpassing them. It's that fear that makes you dig down so hard to find an idea that's worthy of following up.
What I hate is when an author becomes really famous and then suddenly his or her name sells and then the books aren't as good. I really hate when that happens. I mean, when I pick up a book, I want it to be interesting all the way through. There's nothing like the thrill. I read a book recently called What She Knew by Gillian McMillan. And it is one of the most tremendous books I've ever read. It's one of those books that you don't want to end. You're just enjoying it so much and getting so much from the writer that you don't want it to end. And that, there's no better compliment to a writer than had to say that. In your book, the characters, you fall in love with the characters. You like these characters. Now, I'm not saying I want to see a sequel or anything. I'm just saying I really like these characters. And when you invest the time that you invest in this book, you want everything to turn out okay. And there are many, many times in this book I'm thinking, oh, God, I don't know how this poor character is never going to recover from this. Or never going to be the same ever again, But, I mean, books can really do a lot for you because when you read a book, it affects you in some way. And when you're getting pleasure out of a book, there's nothing like that. I mean, there's nothing like that feeling of, wow, this is really terrific. And then if it ends, you're like, you feel like you've lost something.
Wow. Well, that's certainly the goal. I mean, look, when a reader...
I mean, do you have time to read yourself?
Of course, you have to read.
But I mean, I have writers that will tell me, well, I can't read while I'm writing because it mixes me up.
Part of that, I understand. Like, I know people who can't read fiction while they're writing fiction. They only can read nonfiction. And, some people, I think, are incredibly susceptible to strong voices bleeding into their writing. I think that's totally valid. I try to read a lot, even when I'm writing. I find that it actually inspires me.
But the fact that you want to take on something new with every book you write excites me a lot. I think, well, I wonder what he's going to take on next. And there's a certain excitement as a reader when you have that, when that happens, when a writer wants to expand out. I mean, we all know there's writers out there who write the same kind of book every time they write a book. And I'm not dissing that. If it's interesting every time, it's fine. I mean, the Prey series, I still find the Prey series fascinating, every book I read. I don't know how he does it. And you would think after a while you get sick of the same characters over and over and over again, but somehow every book he makes interesting. That's the skill of the writer to be able to do that, because there's other writers. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, the Spencer books got boring to me after a while. A lot of people are going to hate me for saying that, but I just found them too much the same.
How do you find the new books? Am I wrong? Is Reed Farrell Coleman continuing on?
One of them, I forget who's Ace Atkins is doing some, and I think, Reed Carroll's doing one of them. And then there's like three different series I think they're doing.
Right.
I'm actually enjoying them, actually. I mean, once you get over the fact that it's not Robert Parker writing, and you can expand your mind a little bit, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I've had people tell me the Robert Ludlum books aren't as good without his writing. But, you know, it all depends on the writer. It all depends on what they're doing with it.
Sure.
I mean, can you imagine somebody else?
Writers.
What's that?
No. I couldn't imagine someone else, like, just carrying on my brand and writing for me. That would be strange. It's weird enough when other writers write scripts in the Wayward Pines universe and are writing my characters, but in script form for the screen. That's strange. I don't know. I think the writers who really do something different each time out, those are the ones that I'm most attracted to, because when you hear that they have a new book coming out, it's a big deal, because you know that they probably, like, went to the mat to figure out what this idea was going to be. And it just feels like an event. I mean, I feel the same way about Christopher Nolan's movie.
Memento, yeah. I still remember Memento. That's what an impact that movie had on me.
Inception. Well, I mean, a beautifully original idea.
I will tell you right now, I still do not understand Inception. I really am confused by that whole movie. And I was really annoyed watching it because I couldn't figure it all out. And I kept thinking, well, I must be really stupid that I can't figure out what's going on in this movie. It must be me. There had to be other people that were confused by that movie.
I loved it. It is a very complicated plot, for sure.
Well, you start to wonder what's real and what isn't. That's why I have trouble with flashbacks in books, because I'm always afraid I'm not going to know where the story is, what time frame we're in, or what. I remember when I was reading The Time Traveler's Wife, and it goes back and forth in all these different areas of this couple's lives, and I'm thinking I'm totally lost here. You know, I don't know where we are or what we did. You know, and your mind just becomes so jumbled after a while. But your book, I mean, Dark Matter could have been a lot more complicated than it was, and it isn't, and it's very easy to read, and I like that about it. I mean, you could have made it much, much, much more confusing, but you didn't. You made it very simple.
Well, early drafts of it were pretty confusing.
Really?
So
you had to go back and change a few things?
Yeah, the whole middle section, without getting too spoilery, but you'll know what I'm talking about once he goes, I would call it, through the shock and awe portion of the book.
Right.
Please. Kind of in the multiverse.
What's your biggest fear?
What's my biggest, as a writer or as a human?
No, in general. What do you fear most? Well, yeah, as a writer and then as a human.
Well, it's probably both. It's just being bored.
Being bored. It doesn't sound like you're ever bored.
I'm not, but I still have the fear of it.
But, I mean, you do know how to write. We know that now, obviously. I mean, the Wayward Pines series is fascinating. Dark Matter is terrific. I mean, you know what you're doing. So, is the worry that the next book is going to be a complete mess and that nobody will read it?
No, it's not that. I do actually, at the end of the day, have faith in myself that I will rise to the occasion and deliver a big, next satisfying book. But it's just, it's hard to get there. It is an idea like Dark Matter and like Wayward Pines. They're not just hanging out there on trees to go pick them. I mean, it takes, and it's not just, what I think actually makes them also special is that there's pieces of what I would say in hindsight is therapy, self-therapy for me in the writing of these books. And I think it's integral to the story working and feeling as intimate as it does.
Mm-hmm.
With Dark Matter, the whole road not taken element that I really didn't realize I was writing that sort of thing as I was writing the book. But in hindsight, it's like, well, obviously, 37 years old, and you get a sense of your own history at that age, and you're starting to just have a sense of paths not taken. But that, it's just a high bar for me to get excited about an idea and to want to throw myself into it. So it's just more that. I feel like it is, it must be for, you know, these marathoners start on a race. Like, it's going to be painful and it's going to be long and hard, and there's going to be moments where you want to quit. You have to push through. So it's a lot of just getting psyched up to it.
It's interesting. I was looking online. I always go online to see what, like, little tidbits I can find out about authors, something that I didn't know before that I can hit them with. And every picture I saw of you online looked different than the other one. I'm like, this guy, is this the same guy?
Yeah.
And you have very, very wild, different pictures. I love that. I love that about you. You think, are you sure that's the same person? You know, and your mind plays tricks on you. You start to think, well, maybe it's somebody. Maybe his real name's not Blake Crouch. Maybe that's something else. You know, you always want, you hear these fantastic names, you know, and you wonder, is that their real name? Now, come on.
Right.
So is Blake Crouch your real name?
It is my real name. Blake is my middle name. Really is what I go by in regular life. My first name is William.
William, okay. Well, that's my middle name, so that's a great name. It's funny how many people will say, what's your middle name? And then people get so weird, such weird reactions about people's middle names. It's like, what if it was Marion? Would that bother you, you know? Didn't do anything bad for John Wayne, you know?
Exactly.
But, I mean, life is so funny like that, how we react to certain things. I mean, we're very visual creatures, you know, and we react to different things different ways, you know, and I mean, the fact that you know what you're doing writing, and every book's going to be interesting. I just know it is. And just reading Dark Matter, I'm very confident that the next one's going to be just as interesting.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I know. And I think to myself, well, just talking to him, I realize that he really cares about his writing. He's not just, well, my name's Blake Crouch, I can write whatever I want, or it doesn't even have to be good. You're not like that. And I'm convinced there are writers that are like that, that just write whatever they want to write. And, you know, it's not necessarily that they don't know how to write. It's just that their name sells and they don't have to write a great book. I mean, I hate to say it, but at the end of Michael Crichton's career, I didn't. The book about the monkeys, that totally lost me. You know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's me. Maybe I'm missing something. But, you know, I don't feel the same way about that book as I do about a book called Prey, which he wrote. About
nanotechnology. Yeah,
terrific book. I mean,
you have to care. I think. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to do it if I didn't care. You believe there's lots easier ways to make money that doesn't.
But I have to admit, right. I have to admit, co-authors. When I see a co-author on a book, I get a little scared. I start to think, well, how is this? Who really wrote this book? And it's not like I don't want to trust the writer, but when I hear a writer's name, I want to know that writer wrote that whole book. Is that wrong of me to feel that way?
I mean, I think it depends on what the in what frame of reference you're talking about. Are you talking about one of the heavyweights who basically brings writers in? And
yes. Well, that's
a heavyweight.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. I've co-written a couple of books, not in that capacity, with friends back before I was actually all.
So why do you do co-writing? Is it because
I did it because purely for the fun of it. I wrote a book called Dracula. I know it sounds insane. With a guy named Jeff Strand, Joe Conrath, and F. Paul Wilson.
The writer, Jay Conrath? I know him.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. The four of us spent 2 months writing this book, sending it back and forth. It's the most sheer fun I've ever had writing. It was just like play. That's the only reason I've ever co-written.
Right.
Just for the sheer fun of it.
So what kind of reaction did you get from it? I mean, what did people say?
Oh, they loved it. We published this thing in, it was back in 2000.
But that's the point. You there were four of you said?
There was four of us, and so the book was 80,000 words, and then we published after the book. And by the way, it's like a B horror movie set in a hospital, totally tongue in cheek, over the top, just pure fun. But the second 80,000 words of the book, I mean, it's a massive book, are all of our emails back and forth as we were writing it, trying to figure out plot line.
Oh, funny.
Making fun of each other, just generally, like, giving each other shit. It's a lot of fun. I mean, just to be clear, it's horror, it's over the top. It's like a Quentin Tarantino.
But you're not putting your name on a book you didn't write. I guess that's what my point is. If there's somebody's name on a book, I expect that writing. If I know they're writing, I want that writing when I open that book. And if I don't get it, I'm very upset.
I think that's fair.
And Stephen King, I think I always go back to him because he's one of my favorites. You can't copy that man's writing style. It's so distinctive that the thought of anybody taking over is too horrifying to even think. Horrifying. It's funny I should use that word. But I want that certain writing style to be there. And I don't think that's unfair when you see that name. Obviously, they're putting a name on the book to sell the book. And I understand that. I'm very understanding of that. It's just that I want that. As a reader, you get very fussy after a while, I think. You like what you like, and you don't like what you don't like.
Sure. Well, to me, it's the same thing as, I don't love that. I don't love that trend of, I mean, just from a business perspective, I don't love the trend of just the massive brand names being associated with books that are written by different writers. It takes up so much shelf space that, like, actually new original voices could maybe have. I feel the same way about Marvel DC movies. There's so many superhero movies out there. And it's like, could we just have more original content? And I understand original content is always a risk, and it's hard to sell. And for every 10 things that are made, one thing is a success.
Yeah, why is it? Why is it Girl on the Train took off a year or two ago? I mean, and I love the book. Don't get me wrong; I thought the book was tremendous. I mean, but why does a book like that take off, and other books that are really well written just get forgotten? I mean, it's something we'll never know. I mean, your book, Dark Matter, is not going to get forgotten. It's because it's really that good. I think it's as good as Girl on the Train, but it's a different book. It's a totally different book. It's nothing, there's no similarities at all with it other than, actually there is no similarity. I was going to say there's some kind of alternate reality in Girl on the Train, but there really isn't. It's really all about voyeurism. Girl on the Train is basically voyeurism.
I have a friend in publishing who has a theory for why it's successful and why other books like it are. And it's a combination of things that are incredibly hot at the moment. It's unreliable narrator, plus the narrative structure is told out of time. In other words, it's not in chronological order. And you have this... Well, I mean, it's basically those two things. Oh, and you have Girl in the title, of course.
So Girl works in the title of a book.
Apparently.
Really? I never heard... Yeah, the girl with the dragon tattoo. Or That's funny. I never thought of that before. Just put Girl in the title of your book and you have a... Now, is Dark Matter on the bestseller list yet?
It hit the New York Times bestseller list in its first week. It hit three of them, actually.
Really? What number is it on the New York Times?
Came in at 14 on the hardcover.
Oh, that's so wonderful. God, and when the movie comes out, it's going to go right up again. I mean, I guarantee that, because the book is just tremendous.
Well, that's very kind of you to say.
But do you worry about that kind of stuff, or do you just worry about writing?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a lie if I said I didn't care. Yeah.
Well, you do care.
The book that I write, and I do care. I want people to love it. I want a lot of people to write. I think one of the great thrills of writing commercial fiction is having a lot of people read it and engage with it. So, yeah, it matters to me that a lot of readers turn up for the book.
Well, I have to admit, when I was reading the book, I kept thinking, wow, I wonder if this could ever happen to me. And it kind of scared me. So you even though this isn't a horror book, you scared me anyway.
Good. I love that. I love that.
You know, it's
still
weird.
I'm still a horror writer at heart. I still, there's a horror writer
I was watching an old TV show, which I don't know if you know that you remember, called Thriller with Boris Karloff the other night. And there was an episode with William Shatner where he goes to this, he comes back to visit his, I think it's his aunt, and she's bought this painting called The Grim Reaper, and every time somebody dies, the Grim Reaper painting bleeds. It sounds like a silly premise, or maybe it sounds like a good premise. I don't know. But anyway, the first 15 minutes of the show just freaked me out. For some reason, it was so very effectively done, and I was freaked out. I haven't watched the rest of the show. It was on late at night, so I didn't get to watch the whole thing. But it totally gripped me. It's funny how certain things can really get you scared, and other things you're like, oh, I've seen that all before, you know. And We've become so enamored, or so with horror stuff. I mean, look at The Walking Dead. I mean, I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. But and if I have to wait one more day to figure out who got killed on that show, I'm going to go nuts. But it's not fair to do that to the audience. It's just really and now they've decided to push it back 2 more weeks, so we really have to suffer. But
wow.
The people who created
I hadn't heard that.
Well, it was supposed to start October 9th. Now it's not going to start until October 23rd. And I'm going to go nuts those 2 weeks, I can tell you right now. Yeah, I'll have to read books or something. But, you know, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. We have to end it at some point or another. But the dark matter is just tremendous. And
I've had so much fun chatting with you. This was fun. It was just like a regular conversation.
Yeah, you're a terrific guy.
A lovely change.
And you're very open, which really works well with an interview. You're not afraid to express yourself, and that's obviously with the book and then personally, which is nice. So the book again is called Dark Matter from Crown Books, and we've been talking to Blake for the whole hour now. And this has been Dave's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.